time. Now, this is a part of the story of Noah that you don't often see children's Bible pictures of. Noah getting hammered. It's also a part of the story that most people don't ever preach from, that we actually don't study very often in church. But it's right here. I would love to see how VeggieTales would deal with this. VeggieTales, Noah, the Naked Edition. Very quick, one verse. Plants a vineyard, gets hammered. Hi, and today we are in Genesis chapter 8. This is the closing parts of the epic story of Noah. And we're going to look at some bits that maybe people don't often look at, and we'll talk through it. But at first, I want to get to Genesis chapter 8. If you've got a Bible, you can check along as I read some of this. We're not going to read a lot of it because I don't want to take up time talking about stuff that you can read where you are later, because it's a great thing to do. Just sit down and read this whole story. It's only a few chapters long, and it gives you a better overview of it. So we're just going to read from Genesis chapter 8 and verse 1, and this is what it says. God remembered Noah and all the wild animals and livestock that were with him on the ark, and he sent wind over the earth, and the waters receded. Now the springs of the deep and the floodgates of the heavens had closed, and the rain had stopped falling from the sky. Now I just want to stop here really briefly, because this phrase livestock turns up here. We may at some point come back to that in another week, the whole livestock thing, because people draw different conclusions when they read this account of Noah about what happened before and after the flood. So now down in verse 6, after 40 days, Noah opened the window that he had made in the ark, and he sent out a raven, and it kept flying back and forth until the waters had dried up from the earth. Then he sent out a dove to see if the waters had receded from the surface of the ground, but the dove could find no place to set its feet because the water was still over the face of the earth. So it returned to Noah in the ark, and he reached out his hand and took the dove and brought it back to himself in the ark. Now, we're going to come back to this story of the dove and the raven next week, because it's a really important story and a wonderful, wonderful illustration. But what's about to happen is this ark is about to land on dry ground. It's going to take weeks and weeks for the waters to recede and them to bump down onto the top of the mountain. It's finally going to make landfall in a different sense than any other boat has ever made landfall before or after, because they aren't coming towards land. Land is coming up towards them as the flood water recedes. It's a quite different scenario. And it happens around the 9 months mark. Now, men might think that 9 months is a long time. Only women know how long 9 months is when they're waiting for something. And if you don't understand why, if your wife's ever had kids, ask her, okay? So only women really know what 9 months really means to wait for something that you're expecting. And so they've been waiting a long time for this ark to actually settle on dry ground. It's about a year and 10 days between the day that they entered the ark and the day that they left. And Noah comes out of the ark at the end of this chapter, at the end of chapter 8, and from chapter 8, verse 15, all the way to chapter 9 and verse 17, you have this incredible account of what happens as Noah comes out of the ark. He builds an altar. God speaks to him. God makes him promises. The plans are made about how God will treat the human race. And he shares all of this stuff with Noah. It's quite a fascinating conversation or interchange between God and a human being and his family on the earth. And you need to read through it to get a good picture of the promises that are made to Noah by God. And he places the rainbow in the sky, And he makes a promise that he'll never wipe out human beings and all life on earth again, in the way that this has happened, which is quite a comforting thought. But now I want us to zoom down to chapter 9 and verse 20-ish. Because this is what it says. After all this incredible stuff that has been said between God and Noah and the building of the ark and God speaking to him and all of the things that we've just said, this is what it said. It says, chapter 9 of Genesis and verse 20. Now, Noah was a man of the soil. I love that description of Noah. I've said that before, but I just love it because it has different connotations, right? It's reminding us that Adam was made from the earth. So he's a man of the soil. So not just hobby-wise, and we're going to go there in a moment, but that's his origin. Right? He's a man of the soil. And he comes from the earth and will return to the earth. To dust you were made and to dust you shall return. Often hear that talked about in funerals. But Adam's origin was made in the image of God, but clearly came from the dust of the earth. Now it's sacred dust because God made it. And now Noah is described here as a man of the soil, but not just in his origins because of what it says, right? Noah, a man of the soil, proceeded to plant a vineyard. When he drank some of its wine, he became drunk and lay naked inside his tent. Now this is a part of the story of Noah that you don't often see children's Bible pictures of. Noah getting hammered. Now, it's also a part of the story that most people don't ever preach from, that we actually don't study very often in church, because it's quite a confusing little story, this. But it's right here in the text. So we have to look at it. And I think it's really, really important. Now, you can get a false impression if you just read the verses and take them exactly as they stand. I would love to see how VeggieTales would deal with this. VeggieTales, Noah, the naked edition. I don't know what that would look like. Right, Noah, a man of the soil, proceeded to plant a vineyard. When he drank some of the wine, now you've got to stop right there. All right, he plants a vineyard and drinks the wine, and it's the very next word. End of verse 20, he plants the vineyard. Very next word, when he drank some of the wine, he became drunk. Now I don't know if you've ever seen Jack and the Beanstalk cartoon when his mum throws the beans out of the window. The very next morning, his massive beanstalks have grown and they're all the way up to the sky. This is not a fairy tale. This is not a cartoon. It wasn't like plant, grow, produce wine, drink it, and it happens in 10 seconds. This takes years. Years and years. He comes out of the ark. There's flood damage everywhere. Yet the water's dried. The ground's dried up because the water's gone. But there's flood damage everywhere. And Noah plants this vineyard. He tills it. He clips it. He prunes the stuff. You can tell I'm not a gardener. He bends the grapevines over. He picks the grapes after years of cultivating them, and he presses them, and he does the whole thing with the yeast and the sugars and all the fermentation process, and he produces this wine, and he gets hammered. That takes years. Now, why am I emphasizing that? Because of the incredible shift in the nature of this man. He doesn't just wake up one morning and think, oh, let's get rat-faced. He doesn't do that. It takes years for him to drift into this manner of behaving. It takes years. He drifts there. It's slow. It's almost imperceptible. But day by day, month after month, he becomes a man without a plan. He becomes a man without a direction. You see, for over 100 years of his life, if you take the dates that are written here, and if you want to ignore the dates, if for a huge span of his life, this man has been caught up with a project that God has given him. He has a plan, he has a purpose, he has a direction, he has words from God, he's sacrificing to God, he's giving of himself, his time, his wealth, and his reputation. All he's giving all of this stuff to God because he has a purpose. Now, at this point, he's a man without a purpose. And he starts to drift. Let me tell you something. Human beings without a purpose start to drift. The Bible says, without vision, people perish. Without vision, people cast off restraint. Without a vision and clear purpose of God and their place in God's plan, people start to drift. And we can measure that and see it in our own lives. Where we don't have a purpose, where God doesn't grab hold of our lives and lead us, we start to drift. I sat down at a dinner table a while back with somebody who had been incredibly active in the church, who had been part of all the outings and all the parties and all the events and the planning, and people used to meet on their acreage and all of this stuff. And now they just drifted. They drifted away. They don't even come to church. They just drifted. And what I hear from people often is, yeah, well, I don't need to go to church to worship God. When I'm out on the mountain walk, when I'm out in the mountains and looking around, that's when I feel closest to God. That's my church. And that's true for you at that moment. It is your church. And there's nothing wrong with that at all. Absolutely nothing wrong with it. Except for the phrase, that's my church. That's where I commune with God. Now listen, if you're taking your Bible up on the mountain, you're sitting down, you're reading Psalms, and you're looking around at the wonderful mountains, and the hymn writer says, "When oh, your Lord my God, when I in awesome wonder consider all the works your hand has made," and you're looking at all the creation that God's made, that's great, that's you and God, but what about you, God, and everybody else? That's not corporate act of worship. That's quite a self-centered act of worship. And the Bible tells us that it's not just about me and God. This is about me, God, and how I interact with other people. The two commands that Jesus says are the most important in the world, it's not one command, it's two commands. It's not love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, and that's it. And if it ended there, then we might be able to say, yeah, it's okay for me to just go off and worship God on my own in isolation. But it doesn't end there. It says, and love people like you love yourself. So even Jesus' words tells us it's not good enough to just separate yourself off and go off and do what pleases you, but we are supposed to worship God together. Now this drift, it starts to happen with Noah. Now, as you read this story of Noah, he's just very quick, one verse, plants a vineyard, gets hammered. It sounds a lot like something that's written in the book of Micah. Now, Micah is the clean pages, he's a minor prophet, and you can look it up later. And I want to read you Micah chapter 4. From verse 2 to the end, to verse 4, end of verse 4. So just two verses, but this is what it says. The nations will come and they will say, "Come, let us go to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob. He will teach us his ways." Do you notice this? This is not people in isolation. It's come, let us go. He will teach us his ways. He will teach us his ways so that we, it's not singular, it's we together, we may walk in his paths. The law will go out from Zion, the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. Now listen to this. He will judge between many peoples and settle disputes for strong nations far and wide. They will beat their swords into plowshares, and they will take their spears and turn them into pruning hooks. Nations will not take up the sword against nation, nor will they train for war anymore. This sounds idyllic, doesn't it? It talks about world peace, right? But listen to this next verse. Every man will sit under his own vine and under his own fig tree, and no one will make him afraid, for the Lord Almighty has spoken. Listen to that verse. Every man will sit under his own vine and under his own fig tree. What's the first thing? After building an altar and having a conversation with God and receiving the promise of God, what's the first thing does it tell us that Noah does? Goes and sits under his own vine. He starts to please himself rather than following the plan and purpose of God. Let me tell you something. Our lives, as we said a couple of sessions ago, are never in a vacuum. Never. What we do affects other people. God's plan in our life affects us, but it also affects the people around us. When Noah plants this vineyard, I don't know if his intention was to get rat-faced. I don't know. It might have just been to have a nice Chardonnay with his meal. I have no clue. But when he plants this vineyard, he doesn't do it in isolation. When he gets drunk, he doesn't do it in isolation. And what happens is one of his kids comes in and finds him laying naked in his tent. And he goes out and he tells his brothers. Now, from the flavor and from the inference and the words that are used to describe this, as you read later, it's not just that he goes in and finds his dad naked, because if he'd just gone back out to his brothers and goes, dad's in the tent, rat-faced, and he's naked. They go, yeah, okay. It's not a good thing to do, all right? To mock your parents, not a good thing to do. But it appears that it went beyond that. Because this is what it says. When Noah woke up from his wine and found out what his youngest son had done to him, he said, now, it doesn't tell you that he did anything to his dad, but his son has clearly, at best, gone out and slandered his dad. Now, remember that the first command with promise in the Bible is love your parents, honor your parents, if you want to live long in the land. It's the first commandment that's given with a promise attached to it. And here he clearly mocks his dad at best. That's what he does. And it leads to Noah standing up and saying, cursed be Canaan. That's his son Ham and all his family line. Now listen. At this point, there's only four families on the earth. Noah, Mrs. Noah, Ham, Shem, and Japheth, Mrs. Ham, Mrs. Shem, and Mrs. Japheth. And Noah curses Ham. That's a fourth, a quarter of the family lines on the earth. When we drift, we don't do it in isolation. We don't do it in a vacuum. When we drift spiritually, when we allow ourselves to drift away from God's plan and purpose in our life, we affect every single person around us. That's what we do. Now listen, drift happens naturally. I don't have to concentrate on and work at drifting. This is Noah we're talking about. This is This is the ark building. This is the covenant making. This is the humanity rescuing, the altar building, the righteous countercultural Noah. And suddenly he drifts. And he doesn't have to work at drifting. It just happens. And it's probably imperceptible unless you measure it against something that doesn't move. If I dive, I like to dive. Not very good at it, not very experienced at it. Haven't done a lot of it, but I love doing it. And when you dive in a current, you drift imperceptibly in the current. And it's imperceptible until you look at the ocean bed and then you're going. Unless you measure yourself against something that's not moving, you cannot gauge your drift. Me and my wife went on a hot air balloon ride. It was fantastic. And there's no wind in a hot air balloon because you move at the speed of the air around you. And you can only gauge your speed by looking at the ground beneath you. You measure yourself against something that isn't moving. Now, the Bible says in Hebrews chapter 13, in Hebrews 13, verse 8, it says this, that God is the same yesterday, today, and forever. He doesn't move. So when I measure myself against him, I can find where I'm drifting. Now, I drift without any effort. But for me to stay close to God takes a conscious, deliberate, absolutely adamant personal commitment. I have to be intentional about it. And if I'm not intentional about it, and if you're not intentional about it, we will drift. And we will drift away from the plan and purpose of God in our life. And we will drift towards every man under his own vine. Now, does that mean we'll all become winemakers? No. But what's the ideal in our culture? Kick back, enjoy what you've earned, and live a life of leisure. Every man under his own ideal. If that's where we're heading, if that's where I'm heading in my life, every man under his own ideal, if I am giving up the plan and purpose of God in my life to settle for every man under his own vine, that's a sad state for me to be in. It's a sad state for you to be in. And I want you to check yourself today against this unmovable thing. I want to check yourself today against God, who is the same yesterday, today, and forever. And check to see where we're following the plan and purpose and call of God in our life, and to make sure we're not drifting. That we're not drifting, and that my main goal hasn't stopped to be serving God. And my main goal now is to, hey, every man under his own vine. It sounds so appealing. But look at the wreckage that it leads to. Let's not drift. Again, find our church website. Find the phone numbers on there. If you want to talk to somebody, email us or phone. It'd be great. Bless you and stay safe. Don't drift.